Well, you know
who we identify with in this story you've just heard. We are always on the side of the one talent man. Maybe it's because few of us are overly endowed with talents. And maybe it's because we always like stories about the little guy who makes good. We love the story of the fellow who went head-to-head with the IRS and won, or the mother who took up the mighty corporation and triumphed. We like stories about the little guy. Toward the end of his time with us, Jesus told us this story, the parable of the talents. And I think that we cannot forget the context, because it is told towards the end of his life, just before Jesus launches out on a journey to Jerusalem. Just before Jesus leaves us, he tells us a story about a man who is going away. A man is getting ready for a journey, he says. And this man in the story is rich. And so he calls his servants to him, and he distributes his money. He gives them a lot of money. A talent is the largest unit of monetary measurement in the ancient Near East. We are talking 75 pounds of pure silver, a great fortune. He gives one of them 5 talents. To another, he gives 2 talents, a couple of 100 pounds of silver. To another, he gives 1 talent. But I remind you that even 1 talent is a lot of money. 15 years of wages he gives to a servant at one time. And then the master leaves town, which probably increases our sympathy for the servants. For we found out now, not only is he rich, but he's an absentee landlord. He's probably living someplace warm and sunny while people slave for him in the coal mines of Appalachia or the orange groves of Florida, just when his servants could use his advice on investments. He leaves town. Servants 1 and 2 go out and wheel and deal with their master's money. But servant number 3, the one with just 1 talent, goes and does the cautious thing, the right thing. He's got only 1 talent, not 2, not 5. Still, it's a lot of money. So he goes out and he digs a hole in the ground and he buries the talent. Stands over it, stands guard, keeps it safe and sound. He doesn't risk his master's money. Like those other servants, he buries it. Now, I remind you that there were no banks in those days. Burying your money was the only prudent way to protect your property. In fact, the rabbis ruled if somebody gives you money and you go bury it and then it's somehow stolen, you're not liable. You did what was responsible, careful, and wise. You buried the money. By burying the money, the servant is assured of a positive judgment from his master, and a positive judgment from us, because he has acted wisely and prudently and carefully, the same way you and I would have acted. What's more, this servant appears to have had a course in business ethics. It's not his money, after all, because he, of all the servants, appears to be the only one who understands what great trust has been given over to him as a steward of his master's money. It's not his money, after all. He's got no right to gamble with his master's money in wild speculation. And what's more, usury, or the obtaining of interest for money, is still frowned upon in Israel. So he has not only done the prudent thing, the right thing, he's also done the biblical thing. He buries the money. Well, eventually the master returns, and he wants to know how things have gone in his absence. Servants 1 and 2 report, great things have been done by them. They took their master's money, they invested it, they got great results, and the master's thrilled. So thrilled, he lets them keep all the money. Enter into the joy of your master. Well, servant number three has also had great results. Here, master, here's the talent you gave me. Here's the talent back, all safe and sound. I didn't waste any of it. I didn't risk any of it. I didn't blow any of it on crackpot business deals or loan any of it to cronies. Besides, I knew that you were a hard man, the type of master who loves to squeeze blood out of a turnip, who expects to reap where you didn't sow, to gather where you have not scattered. I knew you were a hard man, and here's your talent, all back, safe and sound. And the master says, you wicked and slothful servant, blood out of a turnip my eye. If I were all that hard-hearted, then one would have at least expected you to put the talent in an insured CD and an FDIC-backed bank, and then I would have at least gotten 1%. Take what he has, scrape the dirt off it, and give it to the one who's got 10 talents. And right there is where we do not like this story. The little guy has gotten clobbered for doing what's right, what's prudent, for doing what we would have done. It is a story about how the rich get richer and the poor get the short end of the stick. And if you know anything about Jesus, you know that he told much, much more palatable stories. Like, they were passing the collection plate on Sunday morning, and all the rich were putting in bundles of bills and large checks and tossing in their American Express cards, and Lori Brown was so happy. But there was this one poor little widow, this one with a little coin, and it was all that she had. And Jesus said, she gave more than all the rest. We love that little story about those little guys. We love stories about the little guy who gets to go forward and the big guy who gets clobbered. And we don't like this story that ends with a little man left clutching his one little talent, shaking, saying, Master, I knew that you were rough and tough, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you had not scattered, so I did the prudent, cautious, careful thing. Aren't those great Christian virtues, prudence, caution, carefulness? You wicked little wretch, take what he's got and give it to the others. And by the way, if I should ever be so dumb as to give you $100, would you note I do not want you to invest it. I want you to go and bury it in the ground. I would rather get back my principal with no interest than risk not getting anything back at all. And so what do you think of this master? That's the question Matthew wants to leave our minds with as we finish this story. What do you think of this master? Who is this master? Well, all we know about him at the beginning of the story is that he's rich, that he goes away, and that he finally comes back, that he risks a fabulous amount of money on three servants, and then he gives all the money back to two servants while taking it away from the third. And our first inclination is to agree with the third servant's assessment of the master. Master, I knew you were a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you had not scattered. You're a hard man, you're tough. But come to think of it, that's only the third servant's opinion of the master. The master does not deny nor confirm the servant's opinion of his business methods, which leaves the matter to us to decide. What do you think of this master? When the story begins, we're really not inclined to think poorly of the master. He doesn't seem like a hard-hearted business person. We're inclined to think just the opposite. I mean, how many business types do you know who would drop the equivalent of 15 years' wages on their employees with no strings attached and then leave town? So as the story opens, you might say, this master is anything other than hard-hearted. In fact, you might say he is soft-headed, lavishing what amounts to thousands of pounds of sterling silver on three servants, placing no restrictions on what they're supposed to do with it and leaving town. And when he returns for an accounting, for judgment, that's when you would expect the gavel to come down. That's when you would expect judgment, when this allegedly hard-hearted businessman is just going to let his servants have it? And of course, that's exactly what he does for his servants. For servants 1 and 2, but not as they expected. He lets them have it. He lets them have all of it. He gives them all the money, not just the interest they have made. He gives them the principal too. Enter into the joy of your master. Now I ask you, does that sound hard-hearted to you? No, it's only when the third servant comes in, our man, our little guy, when he stands up to render account, that we are told, and told by him, I remind you, Master, I knew you were a hard-hearted man. I knew you were tough, reaping where you haven't sown. Here's your talent, Mr. Tough Guy, all safe and sound. And would you tell me what a good little boy I've been? Did the servant say, reaping where you did not sow? What did he think the master was doing when he threw nearly 1,000 pounds of silver at them? He was busy sowing. Is the master justified to expect some harvest for such sowing? What do you think of this master? The bishop was going away on sabbatical, and he called the deans together, and he gave one 5 parishes, and he gave to another 2 parishes, and to another 1 parish. And then the bishop went off to Italy to study the Trinity. The one who received 5 parishes got busy, and he planted 5 more parishes. The one who received 2 parishes established 2 more. But the one who received 1 parish sat in his office and attempted to maintain the status quo. After a long time, the bishop returned with facial hair, and he called the deans together in front of the standing committee. And the dean who received 5 parishes presented 5 new ones. Well done, good and faithful dean. I will make you a suffragan bishop. Enter into the joy of a purple shirt. And he said to the same to the one who'd had 2 parishes. The one who had received only 1 parish said, Oh, bishop, bishop, I knew you were a tough bishop. I knew you were hard. I didn't take any chances. I didn't ordain anybody. I didn't share the gospel with a soul. I just kept office hours and went to committee meetings. You wicked and slothful person, you should have at least led a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. You should have set up new ministries. You should have had a Twitter account so that when I returned, Mystery Worshipper would have given us a good review on the internet. Hard bishop, my eye. I mean, this is the Episcopal Church. What could I do to you if I wanted to? Lord, deliver me from these religious bean counters and give me some people who want to wheel and deal. Take that parish from him and give it to somebody who knows how to put this diocese on the map. I knew you to be a hard man. Really now. Does he know the master? Who is the master? Is he a hard-hearted, tough miser of a master who expects to reap where he hasn't sown? Or is he an extravagant wheeler-dealer whose faith in his servants is exceeded only by his wild generosity? I remind you how this story started. He gave them all that he had, every cent. Is it reckless for him to expect them to be as reckless as he? And when they come back to render account, you think that maybe if he's pleased, he'll let them keep a little of the interest they've earned. But no, he tells them, keep it all. Keep the interest, keep the principal, keep it all. It's enough to make you ask, who is this master? The great Richard Niebuhr said, conversion occurs at the moment when you realize the God you once avoided as your enemy is in truth your friend. Jesus had some funny ideas about business. A sower went out to sow, and he carefully planted each seed in the ground. He plowed, he tilled. No, Jesus says. A sower went out to sow, and he began slinging seed in every direction, just hurling seed. Well, some fell on rocks, and some was gobbled up by the birds, but some fell on good ground and yielded much. You get those kinds of results when you do that kind of sowing. "Master, I knew you to be a tough man who expected to harvest where you haven't even sown." "No. Master, I knew you to be a reckless man who expected to harvest in exactly the same way you sowed." And moving from sloppy agriculture to outrageous shepherding, Jesus says, the good shepherd will lay down his life for his sheep. You show me a shepherd who will lay down his life for a $9.95 plus postage sheep, and I'll show you a dumb shepherd, or else an extremely, unbelievably extravagant shepherd. Who is this master? And what would your life be like if you were his servant? Amen.